Okay, welcome everybody. Just right on time. Pleasure to have Rabbi Adam Starr with us from Atlanta. He's sitting in his shul office for the first time in about 2.5 months, I believe, because they're going to have in Atlanta this evening their first minyan since March, outdoor minyan at 8:20, which is why that's the reason that we switched this year to 7:30. So I hope it needs anybody, but it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Starr and to teach the Parsha, and really the Parsha before the holiday of Shavuot. Rabbi Starr's been the rabbi of Or Torah Congregation Atlanta since 2008, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to Torah Motion. Thank you very much, and enjoy the shiur, everybody.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. Thank you so much for the invite, and the hospitality, and the flexibility. That's what we need, a lot of flexibility during this time, as things are evolving. By the minute, by the day. So I appreciate making the space and the time that I could teach at this time at 7:30. Welcome, everyone. Appreciate you coming on to come and learn a little bit about the Parsha. What I wanted to do this evening with you is not only to talk about the Parsha, but I have the ability, since it's the first Parsha of Sefer Bamidbar, to talk about Bamidbar as a whole. And I wanted to really give an approach and a perspective to the whole Sefer, to the whole book, which I think has a really important and relevant message for the time of year that we are living in, meaning the time between Pesach and Shavuot, the period of the Omer, specifically as it relates to the yoms, the special days that we have during this period of time. You're going to see in a moment, Lag BaOmer, Pesach Sheni, Yom HaAtzma'ut, and culminating today with Yom Yerushalayim. And you'll see how Bamidbar is, in many ways, a unique book in this way. And will have particular relevance, I hope, also not only for the time of year that we're in, but I hope as well that it will have relevance for what we are living through right now with all the difficulties and the many challenges. So let's begin. I want to first, I'm going to share my screen so we can look at a few sources. Just give me 1 second so I can pull it up. It was available. It's not. Just give me 1 second. There it is. Okay, good. So as we look at begin Sefer Bamidbar, I wanted to just first open with a midrash. About the timing of the reading of the book of Bamidbar, and then I will get into my broader topic of the book of Bamidbar. So one of the famous midrashim as it relates to the Parsha Bamidbar is really the beginning of what rabbis would often do, which is taking the Parsha and connecting it to the time period that we're in. And this relates also to the structure of when we read Bamidbar, we're told, Halacha teaches us, Le'olam manu ve'atzru, that Bamidbar must always precede the holiday of Shavuot. That's the way we establish, one of the certain rules that we have in establishing the calendar of Torah readings, that even as we're not reading in shul, we still keep up the calendar of Torah readings. And the rule is, Le'olam manu ve'atzru. So first of all, those words are really interesting. Manu the atzru. Manu means count, okay? You should always count and then do atzru, which is the way the rabbis referred to as Shavuot, as the holiday of Atzeret. Counting is the way we refer to the Parsha of, and also the book of Bamidbar. It's a book defined by counting, okay? In fact, as we'll see in a moment, the book, actually, let's think about it. What's the English word for the book of Bamidbar? Anybody want to chime in? Numbers.
Numbers.
Right. The book of Numbers. It's the book of Numbers, which is a very strange name in and of itself. So that this is defined by numbers, meaning I get the other names of the Torah. Genesis, the beginning, right? I get the name of Shemot, the book of Exodus, Leviticus, about the Levitical rites, about the Kohanim and the Levim and the service. Deuteronomy, which is like the summary, right? Numbers? Is that really the best way to define the book, that it is the book of numbers? So hold on to that thought, okay? But the rabbis say, Olam Manu V'Asru. So first we need to read the Bamidbar, and then we celebrate Shavuot. So I wanted to share this medrash with you because I think it's a great introduction just to Torah in general before I get to my overarching discussion and theme about the context and the concept of the book of Bamidbar or the book of Numbers. So let's look at this medrash. Our book begins, V'yidbar Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai, that Hashem spoke to Moshe b'midbar Sinai. Lama b'midbar Sinai? Why do you specifically need to say at this point Moshe spoke at Midbar Sinai? Just say by the Bereshit Moshe Leimor. Why specifically here you need to mention Midbar Sinai? Mikan shanu chachamim. From here the rabbis learned v'shlosha dvarim nitna haTorah. Through three methods, the Torah was given. Ba'esh, through fire, uvamayim, through water, ubamidbar, and through the desert. Ba'esh minayin, where do we know the Torah was given through fire? Bahar Sinai Ashan Kulo Esh, because the mountain was filled, Har Sinai is filled with fire. Uvamayim minayin, where do we know that it was given with water? Shenamar, because we have a pasuk referring to the Torah being given in the book of Shoftim. Gam shamayim natafu, gam avim natfu mayim. The heavens dripped and the clouds dripped with water at Sinai. Uvamidbar minayin? Where do we know, this is the most obvious one, where do we know that the Torah was given in the desert? As it says, our pasuk, Vayidbar Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai leimor. Focus on the midbar of Sinai. So very nice. The Torah that measures and continues. Ilamad nitna b'shlosha devar ma'alalu. Why was it given through these three methods? Ella, to teach us, ma'elu chinam l'chol balei olam, kach divrei Torah chinam. Just as the Torah is free for anybody in the world to come and partake and to take it. Just as water, fire, and the desert are free for humanity. I don't know, I get a water bill, but whatever. Are generally a part of life that is free. So too, the Torah is free for our taking. Beyond that, I think there's actually, we could come up with our own interpretations, and it could be an interesting exercise. In what ways is Torah like water? Okay, so you have the Medrash about Rabbi Akiva, right? The famous Gemara by Rabbi Akiva, a Jew without Torah is like a fish without water, right? Torah is our sustenance. Torah is also Eish, it gives us light, it gives us guidance, it tells us how to go. There's also power, it gives us strength, it gives us energy. And the Midbar and the Torah, as you're going to see in the next teaching, reminds us that we need to be humble, we need humility. So many messages of that, the Parsha, Bamidbar, the rabbis already wanted to say, it's time to start preparing for Kabbalat HaTorah. The Torah is free for the taking, just as if you want to start a fire, you can just start a fire. You want to turn on your faucet for water, you got water. And just as you want to go for a walk out into the desert, you can go for the walk. Torah is here for the taking. Davar acher, second explanation. V'yidbar Hashem Moshe b'midbar, ela kol mi shena osa eina osa kamidbar. This is actually telling us how do you acquire Torah. How do you acquire a Torah? Just as a midbar is hefker, eina yachol liknot et hachachma b'atorah lekach ne'amar b'midbar sinai. Just as a midbar symbolizes humility, and nobody owns a desert per se. The desert is wasteland. So too, how do you acquire Torah? You acquire Torah with becoming like a midbar with humility, willingness to come and accept Torah. Okay, so that's a little introduction. The way rabbis of old have already been started to use the parshiot to get us to be thinking about the time period that we're in, that we are in the week, heading into the week of Kabbalat HaTorah, and something that we should be really thinking about. So as I mentioned, the Olam Manu V'Atzru, right? The rabbis called this, so we in English, which is based on the Latin actually, called the Book of Numbers. But the truth is, the rabbis themselves also referred to the Torah with what I call thematic names. So we have Breishit, Shmot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim. Okay? Those are not thematic names, right? The names that we use for the five books of the Torah are reference points names, I would say, right? They're taken from the first significant word of the book. Breishit is, this begins with Breishit. Okay, that's the first word. Shmot, Ve'ele, so that's not a, that's just and these. Shmot is the first significant word. Vayikra takes a while to actually get the significant word, so Vayikra and he called is close enough. Bamidbar is the first significant word, and Eile HaDevarim is the first significant word. They're references. They are not titles, okay? They're reference points for the book from how the book begins. It's not a title. They're not thematic descriptions of the book. However, Chazal did bring thematic descriptions or titles to the book. So when it comes to our book, which we'll focus upon, Bamidbar is called Sefer Pikudim. It lines up with the English term that we use. It's the book of census. Actually, many of you are in Canada, but in the U.S. we just had the census thing that we every 10 years we have to fill it out to do the census. It just came out. Here you have the book, the census. It's called the Book of the Census, the Book of Numbers, the Book of Counting. So going back to the question I started with, that's a strange name, right? Like the Ramban for Shmot says, Sefer Galut V'Gula, it's the Book of Exile and Redemption. That makes sense. Or the Book of Vayikra, like Torah Kohanim, it's the book about the Kohanim. But is that really what we're talking about here, the census? Here, ironically, I would actually posit that a better title for this book would actually really be Bamidbar. Of all the names that we use, that's actually a title. This deals with our time in the desert. Great title. How were B'nai Israel, how did we operate in the desert? We left Egypt, we built the tabernacle, now we're going to spend 40 years in the desert. Great title. We don't even need to be creative. Let's stick to Bamidbar. But instead of sticking to the obvious Bamidbar, we say, oh, it's the Book of Counting. Counting only takes place in the beginning of this week's parasha. I'll show you where it is. Here it is. I'll get to the end in a moment. Counting takes place, here it is, in the beginning of this week's parasha, chapter 2. This is the very end of the counting. Goes through a whole census, spends a lot of what I like to call Torah real estate. Okay? Torah real estate is how much space the Torah uses to express a particular topic. So sometimes we know the Torah uses very little real estate. Okay, the rabbis have write pages in the Talmud on like a single verse. Sometimes the Torah uses a lot of real estate. There's a lot of real estate, a lot of psukim going through each tribe in the census and what their numbers were. Okay, that is chapter 2 of our parasha, and it concludes with these words. These are the countings of Bnei Israel according to their ancestral houses. Kol pikudei, there's that word again. The census, after they counted, they went through each tribe and gave the number, and they added them all up, and what was that number? 603,550. We have a whole chapter dealing with a census and count. It's not till almost the very end of our book that we have another counting. And it's very similar. We go tribe by tribe by tribe, and we count. How much does each tribe have? And then at the very end of that section, similar language, this is the counting of the Israelites, 601,730. Apparently over the 40 years in the desert, sachakol, at the end of the day, we had 2,000 less people at that point than we had originally. Okay? So we have an accounting at the beginning and the accounting at the end. But why is that the book? That's two sections, two chapters that take up a lot of real estate in terms of a census. But there's so many things that happen in between, right? We got some great stories. One, we have some really sad stories. We have the Meraglim, we have Korach, we have Balak, we have Bilam and Balak. I mean, you got a lot of good stuff in this book. A lot of Bnei Israel not acting great, but it's this piece that takes a central role. Why is that? So I'd like to look at the Netziv and in his introduction to the book of Bamidbar. Let me pause just for a second, see if anybody has any questions. Feel free to, at this point, unmute yourself. If not, I'll go on. Okay. So the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he writes an introduction to the book of Bamidbar. And he's going to bring up the issue that I raised. He says, Zeha Sefer, this book, Nikra Bipiatana is called by the Tana, Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel. And you can find this, and he says in Masechet Sota, Chumash HaPekudim, the Chumash, the book of counting. And he says, so says the Bahag. So he says, why is it called that? Yinirsham Bidat Rabbatina Inyan Shnei HaPekudim Shebezeh HaSefer. It's called this because of the two sense countings, or the two census that take place in this book that I just shared with you. And he says, interestingly, Yoter Mishari Devarim Shem Yechadim Yisrael Sefer, he says, and this seems to be more significant, more important than many other things that occur in this book. Yoter Mishari Devarim Kemar Meraglim. Doesn't talk about the Meraglim. That's not represented in the name. Yerkat Bilam. What had to do with Bilam, the brachas that he ultimately gives to the people, Vod Harpe, a lot of other stuff. Why? So why is this? Answers. Mishum de'ikar ze'a sefer, hu machlif hu mishan ha'riyuchut am ha'ashem b'chai olam, me'ashe egia le'eretz Yisrael. He says, because a very important and significant change occurs from in this book. What is that change? Okay? We change the way we walked with God. From the way we originally were walking with God in the desert to the way we were later walking with God. Why? In the beginning, we were walking with, like at this other outer worldly level. We were walking with, like to the right of Moshe, beyond the world of nature. But it changed. It changed rapidly. It changed when we were then preparing to enter the land of Israel. That now we needed to, I'm skipping ahead, now we needed to go through wars, battles. And Moshe's staff was not readily accessible. Meaning he moves from this supernatural existence with miracles before our very eyes to this more natural existence. When did that occur? He says that occurred where we have a distinction where I'm pointing to here, because it's two generations. The book divides into two groups of people. Mavdil ben Yom Yitzei Mitzrayim ben Ba'ei Ha'aretz. The first part of the book of Bamidbar deals with the generation who left Egypt. They were a generation who saw and lived with God's miracles. The second generation is the generation who would enter the land of Israel. Now you're going to start to understand, why did you need a new census? First census was for one generation. The first census was for the generation of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, who were in fact being counted in preparation to enter the land of Israel. Second census at the end of the book is an entirely new generation, with the exception of a few, Kalev and Yoshua, Moshe and Aaron, right? With the exception of a few, the census is for the next generation, because the previous generation died out, right? Because of the sin of the Meraglim, they died out. Now we have a new generation. So what are we doing now? We're reading the book about the next generation. A generation is an entirely different existence and different experience than the first generation. They didn't grow up on miracles to the same degree as the first generation. They were a generation that lived in more in the world of nature, even though they got the man and other things. They still were more in the world of nature. So you have a census. There's the book of the first generation. The beginning of the book is the first generation. End of the book is second generation. It's about that transition. This book is about, more than anything, the transition from first generation, those that left Egypt, to the second generation, the generation about to enter the Eretz Yisrael. So the Pikud, what symbolizes that more than anything else, is the census. The counting of the first, and then the counting of the second. Now we can see that that's what defines the nature of the book. Okay. And there, if you jump to here, I'm pointing at hey, or where he says, and he says, the Netziv says, you see this in Chazal. And here the Pizal Kavanah, the rabbis say, that by he being so Aharon, in the middle of Bahalotcha, it's called its own Sefer. It's called its own book. Lilamdenu, that in the middle of Bamidbar, there's this, the backwards nuns, we're going to look at that in a moment, teach us, those are brackets, it's its own book, because that's to separate part A, first census, first generation, from part B, second generation, second census. And you need a break to show we're moving from one to the other. Okay? Okay. So based on this general outline that the Netziv says, let's even analyze it a little further. This concept that I'd like to share, the book is the book of numbers, to show the book of the countings, that this book is about the transition from counting A, counting number one, to census number two, from the movement from the people that left Israel left Egypt to the people entering Israel. The people that lived with miracles to the people who enter into a world of nature. So I'm going to show you this as even, I'm going to even strengthen this point. So here we are at that point that I mentioned, the middle of chapter 10 of Bamidbar, which is Parsha Bahalotcha, where smack in the middle of that Parsha, you have these backwards nuns, you see them? So it's the only, it's one of the very few times that in the Torah you have some form of punctuation, or some form of punctuation, okay? You have backwards nuns that are not read, okay? It's almost like parentheses, they bracket off these psukim, okay? I didn't put the whole text here, but if you look at everything until this point, the Parsha Bamidbar, Naso, in the first half of Balotcha until here is very clear. The people are preparing, the first generation. There's a census, they're encamping, they're blowing the the trumpets. You're instructed of how to travel and how to go and what to do. You're planning on entering Eretz Yisrael. Even Moshe turns to Yitro and says, "No, Simanachnu, we're going. Do you want to join us? We're going to the land. Do you want to come?" Meaning the original plan was, we're going in. That first generation hasn't been that long since we left Egypt. We're going to go into, we're ready to enter the land of Israel. That's it. Done. Let's go in, build a Beit HaMikdash. Everything will be great. We're going in. And then you have these strange psukim, which are, we're told, is its own book, and therefore separates, if its own book, it separates between part A and part B. Because what I'd like to suggest is this own book, when the rabbis in Yeshua, they call it the own book, is really the book that never got written. This is what should have happened. This is the book of what should have happened when they entered Israel. They should have gone right in. They were praying to go, and this is what should have happened. But it didn't. Look at the Sforno here. He's one of the first to mention this idea. So he says, "Vahibin being Sarana," right? Then the ark went, was set out. You recite this when we open the Torah. Right? They will carry the ark, enter into the Eretz Israel, seemingly, and our enemies will be scattered. What does the Sforno say? If we wouldn't have ultimately sent the spies out and showed our lack of faith in God and the land of Israel, we would have just walked right into Eretz Israel without a battle. Our enemies would scatter. The destiny of the Jewish people. We receive the Torah, we go right in, build the Beit HaMikdash, no fighting, no enemies. Go straight in. And there, we will become like myriads of thousands. We would multiply. And that's what would have happened. They would have fled in our face. This was the book that should have happened. But what happened? What happened is it never came to fruition. Because we know the second half of Bamidbar is a book filled with complaining, fetching, sinning. And we did the sin of the Meraglim. And we had Korach. And we complained over the water. And we complained over not having enough food. And it was just filled with complaints. And we weren't, and a lack of faith and a lack of trust and a rejection of God's promise. And therefore, that book didn't come to fruition. In fact, I'm going to go back to these other sources in a minute. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a most beautiful essay on the topic, and if you wish, I have a link to it here. A beautiful essay on Ba'alotcha, but where he talks about this issue, and he has this line where he states, the Parsha, talking about Parsha Ba'alotcha, is one story, one tragic story. A tragic story which changes Jewish history completely from top to bottom. The inverted nun symbolized an inverted historical process here. An inverted nun is not so bad. But when history is being inverted, not realized or stopped suddenly, this is very tragic. This is tragic. We didn't go where we were expected to go. We didn't accomplish what we were expected to do. The book here is a book of failure. In fact, I guess at this point, if you ask me, give a title for the book of Bamidbar, the book of failure and disappointment. That's what it is. The destiny was failed. The first half of the book of Bamidbar, at least, the book of opportunity lost. Failure and disappointment. And the inverted nuns, such an amazing line the Rav uses. Inverted course of Jewish history. just to show how Chazal really build on this, Chazal actually say something wild. The rabbis actually say that those psukim, those 85 letters of Vayibin Tzor Aharon is considered its own book, and they actually use it for halachic purposes. Saving 85 letters is what's halachically classified as a sefer for various halachic concerns, whether it's saving a sefer on Shabbos or it relates to Geniza or some Tuma Tahara issues. So it actually has halachic ramifications. And what they actually say then is, if you look at the Gemara over here, which is a continuation of the previous piece, so why do we have these nuns? So, Ella mipnei shesefer chashuv hu bifnei atzmo. It's to teach us it's its own book. Kiman Azla, who's this like? Damar Rav Yishim Benachman, Rav Yochanan, Chatzva Amudah, Shiva Elu Shiva Sifrei Torah. According to this opinion, that there are seven Sifrei Torah. Who knew? Because if it's his own book, what does that mean? We have seven Sifrei Torah. Breishit, Shmot, Vayikra, first part of Bamidbar. These two verses, second half of Bamidbar, Dvarim, seven books of the Torah. They can't call it a Chumash anymore. Chumash means the five. They can't call it the Pentateuch anymore. They have to call it the Septateuch. Okay? Yeah, they go to this point to say there are seven books of the Torah. The book of Bamidbar is actually not one book. It's three books. So you have the pre of the book that's before Vayibin Tzor Aharon, which is the book of opportunity lost. Okay? Then you have the second book of Bamidbar, which is the dream unfulfilled. And then you have the last book of Bamidbar, which is a continued lost opportunity. And what I'd like to share is opportunity rediscovered. There was so much lost. And we have the Meraglim, and we have Korach. But then we read about the second generation. It's uncovering the loss. It's rediscovering, as I said in my title here, recovering the lost opportunity. And I'd like to give you two examples of recovering the lost opportunity. So first of all, the most obvious is the second census. The second census says, God did not abandon us. The first generation lost the ability to go back in, but we know what we're going to do. We're going to do it again. We end the book of Bamidbar the way it started. Okay, it didn't work out. But just because things don't always work out as we wish and as we wanted them to, doesn't mean all is lost. We're going to get a second chance. We're going to take another census. And we're going to prepare once again to enter Eretz Yisrael. All is not lost. All is not lost if we realize the mistakes of the past, and we never give up. Who symbolizes this? It's the story, it's one of the famous stories at the very end of Bamidbar, the daughters of Slavchad. The daughters of Slavchad actually lost their family, I should say. Their family lost land lost a portion of land in the land of Israel because their father died. And their father was no tzaddik, according to Rashi and others. He was Mekoshe Sheitzim. He was the guy who gathered those bundles of sticks stick on Shabbos. And he died. They only had daughters, and therefore they're saying, our father's going to lose out. He died in the desert, and why is our ancestral family going to lose out and not get a portion of the land? Why did we have to wander in the desert 40 years? Because we rejected the land. Benot Slavcha to come and say, we can't live without having the land. There's got to be a way, Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way that our family can have a portion in this land. And they go to Moshe. And they say, Moshe, Lama Nigara, how could we not have a piece of the land? Now, what's interesting here is the way they, unlike previous complaints to Moshe, they do it extremely respectfully. If you look at the language here, they do it tamodna, which is a language they stand in front of with respectfully. They don't blame Moshe like Korach did. They don't blame Moshe like the Meraglim did and many others did. They say, Moshe, help us out. We want that land. We're not complaining to you. Just help us. And how does the story end? Moshe goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, ah, we're going to find a way for them to have the land. The people want the land so badly. That is the message that I want. That is almost a tikkun, I would suggest. The notes of Chad are a tikkun for the Meraglim. The Meraglim rejected the land. And who embraced the land? There's a fascinating Klei Yakar, by the way, that said, it says, Shlach Lecha Anashim. And they said, Moshe said, send out spies. And the Klei Yakar says, that was the mistake. You should have sent out the women, because the women, like Benot Slavcha, appreciate Eretz Yisrael. Fascinating Klei Yakar. Way ahead of his time, certainly, by writing that. That was what he wrote. But this is saying, it's also the theme our father lost it. No, you didn't lose it. If you care deeply and you want to do the right thing, there will be other opportunities. Things are not lost forever. And the truth is, I love this. Who did the Benot Slavchad model what they did after? They actually, in this case, learned a message from the first half of Bamidbar. The story of Pesach Sheni. Same, it's so similar to Benot Slavchad. These were people who were Tamei Nefesh. They were impure for very good reasons. According to many, it was a Meit Mitzvah where they were carrying Yosef's bones. I mean, they were doing sacred acts. But because they're impure, they're not able to bring the Korban Pesach. And they use the exact same language. Lama Nigara. Or Benot Slavchad using the exact same language. Why are we going to, they do it respectfully again? Why are we going to be left out? We want the opportunity to serve you, Hashem. We want to do mitzvot. We're not complaining for the sake of complaining. We want to do mitzvot. But just because we lost an opportunity, does that mean it's lost forever? And perhaps that message was ringing in the ears of the next generation. That although we were not allowed to enter the land of Israel right away, nothing is lost forever. There's always another opportunity. There's always a second chance. And what happens here, the same exact story as Benot Slavchad. Moshe goes to Hashem, and Hashem says, ah, Pesach Sheni, we're going to find another opportunity. That's the second book. That's the second counting. The second generation who's going to do everything the first generation was supposed to do. All seemed lost. It was a depressing book. We didn't fulfill what we were supposed to in the middle book. But you know what? It's not all over. It's not over. Model after Benot Slavchad, have another census, and we're going to enter into the Eretz Yisrael again. We've recovered what we have lost. Why is this message so significant? For me, this is the overarching message of the period of the Omer. The Omer, biblically, is not a sad time at all. It should be a most joyous time. It's just about counting up to Matan Torah. But we know the Omer became a very sad time. Okay, a lot of Rabbi Akiva's students perishing, the Crusades, many other terrible things happened. But the Omer has certain days in it. And I'd like to suggest these days in the Omer all have the same theme. They all have the theme of recovering lost opportunities. What takes place during the Omer? Pesach Sheni. That's the biblical model. That's our biblical model of recovering lost opportunities. That's the oldest, by far, holiday that exists in the Omer. Things aren't lost forever. We can recover. Even in the midst of the Omer, we're going to find good days. What else occurs during the Omer? Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim, Lag Ba'Omer. Let's look at Lag Ba'Omer. Lag Ba'Omer is the message that, yes, 12,000 pairs of Rabbi Kiva students perished, but we still don't despair, as Or Gedalia Ho says. We don't give up. Rabbi Akiva never gave up. He found his five students and he rebuilt Torah through them. That's when we celebrate Lag Ba'Omer. All is not lost. So that's another day we took out of the Omer and said, you know, that's a happy day. Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, the same. After 2,000 years of exile, we've returned, Baruch Hashem, to our Medina, to our land and built a Medina. These days that were used to be days of sadness are turned to days of joy. We are blessed to have our own state. We are blessed to have, as we'll be celebrating tonight, Yerushalayim and the Kotel and our holy sites. These were lost. Our ancestors only dreamed of these days, of these places. They davened towards them, but that was it. We can, hopefully soon, just hop on a plane and get there. We live in blessed times. And my approach to the Omer is that little by little, we're chiseling away. We're chiseling away at the morning of the Omer. We're taking days back. Lag Ba'Omer, good day. Lo no tachnun. Pesach Sheni. Yom Ha'atzmaut. Yom Yerushalayim. We're chiseling away to take the Omer back to what it originally was. The Omer, which represented lost opportunity, a time is supposed to be joy, became sad. Similar to the book of Bamidbar, how Bamidbar teaches us, we never give up. We need to rebuild, we need to create. We've been blessed in our times to realize all that we're going through, there are times for growth and to rebuild and to recover and uncover lost opportunities to continue to find blessings. That's my message of the book of Bamidbar, the book of Numbers. Where numbers, therefore, not about the count itself, but the count represents. It represents that transition from the first generation to the second generation, that even as the first generation failed in a certain sense, the second generation was able to pick up from its lost opportunities, telling us that nothing is ever lost forever. We always have more and more opportunities to grow and to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what I want to share with